Yeah, I don't know what would make more a Twitter line. Desperately looking for black holes, primordial, or I'm still looking for WIMPs. Looking for WIMPs with noble liquids, so thanks for this opportunity. I'm going to review briefly where we stand with this search using this material. Of course, the reason why we focus on this now is that we have seen this accelerated pace with which we have been excluding, at least so far, interaction of WIMPs with normal matter use, and this search for WIMPs has really been led by noble liquids, in particular liquid xenon, I should say, until now. And so we look forward to see, of course, the other noble liquid come up to the same sensitivity level. So here you see in time how much progress we have seen, we have done, we have made. So why are these noble, what are these noble liquids? Why we're interested in them for dark matter search in particular? I put just a few properties here. I think the first attraction of these materials for dark matter search is their scalability. We can fill very large volume detector at a reasonable cost. They are homogeneous. And I think that very important, since we operate this experiment in underground environment, the fact that they are inert, non-flammable, is actually a very good thing. Safety is a prime concern in underground laboratory, and so these are great material for detectors underground. The high density and the Z, you see, I'll focus. I mean, Dan will tell us about some specific state of helium, but we are talking about argon and xenon. So if you look at the Z and the density, when we cool them down, when we condense them, we can get density of 3 grams per cc, let's say, for liquid xenon, 1.4 for liquid argon. And coupled with the Z, for instance, in xenon, you see this property that we brag a lot about, which is very important, is the self-shielding ability of this material to absorb radiation, which, of course, we are fighting these backgrounds in these very rare searches. And so a self-shielding ability, as we say, comes from this property, much better for xenon than for argon. I think the transparency to their own light, I will talk about later, but they are available commercially, not so easy. I mean, you need to have money. I mean, you have to put a lot of effort to actually acquire them, clean them, make them worthy of, make them function in a detector. That's not trivial, but we're getting there. We've made a lot of progress. And the main attraction, I would say, is in this column. You see the yield, the ionization and scintillation yield, the amount of charges or carriers and the amount of photon of lights that you have per unit energy is quite large, and I will show you this is to me the greatest reason why we're using this material. And before I go and say how we use them, the processes, the mechanism which leads to this formation of signals in these noble liquids is depicted here. It's a bit complicated, but in a nutshell, when you have energy deposited in these materials, you're going to both excite the atoms and molecules of this material, and the excitation leads to the formation of these excimers. These excimers then will go to the ground state, will de-excite either in a triplet or singlet state, emitting very deep UV light. So that's the primary source of scintillation light. This light is then, there's a lot of light, the yield is high, but similar to the inorganic scintillator, but very fast as well, very fast decay time, similar to the organic actually. So that's an amazing combination. But you can get to these excited states also through the process of ionization. You of course, when there is energy, you also produce electron-ion pairs in this case. These guys like to recombine very quickly with each other, but you apply an electric field to separate them. But the recombination process, which is there and you can not really easily overcome, also leads to the formation of excited states. So you get the scintillation light also through the recombination process. which is field dependent and which is also dependent on the type of particle that you have, that the energy is coming from. So you have this particle identification that you can get from the amount of light and charge that you detect. We talked about a lot of the energy in this interaction goes into heat, elastic nuclear scattering. We are not really looking at them, at that form of energy in these detectors that we have been built so far, but it should be done. So we have these two signals and we make great use of them. And one way that we do it, and most of the experiments that are running with xenon for sure, is to put this material in a two-phase dime projection chamber. So that's the principle of this detector. This is a 3D imager. It's a detector which is, of course, homogeneous. You fill this cryostat or this container with this liquid, which you keep clean. If it's kept clean enough, you can then apply an electric field to drift the ionization electrons, which are produced by ionization, against the field. And we rely on this trick of proportional scintillation because we don't aim at detecting directly the few electronic charges that we produce through ionization. We actually amplify these charges in the gas phase above the liquid by the process of luminescence. Once the electrons reach the liquid to gas interface, in that gas region we apply a stronger field, and as they accelerate in that field, we have actually more photons. And so we have directly two signals, the direct light, the fast prompt scintillation, and we call sometimes S1, and then a delayed signal, which is proportional to ionization, to the energy deposit in the liquid, which we call S2, which is also, of course, the light signal, which we detect with photosensors. So far in these experiments, you will see the photosensor is a photomultiplier tube, of course, not the standard one you have on the shelves of your lab, a special phototube, sensitive to this very deep UV light. We're talking 178 nanometer wavelength for xenon. So we have these two signals. The time difference between the two, if you know the drift velocity, gives you the depth at which the WIMP or your background gamma ray has interacted, and the pattern of the light on these photosensors gives you the X and Y localization of the event. So you have a 3D imaging device. You measure the energy from S1 and S2. You measure this, of course, location, as I mentioned, and the self-shielding I mentioned as well, which is actually a quite powerful also. Having the imaging allows you to select a very clean fiducial volume. When you hear a lot about fiducial volume in this detector, so we reject the dirtier volumes at the edges of the detector where you have a lot of background, and we use the ratio of this charge to light, which is different for nuclear recoil type induced by WIMPs or neutron than for electronic recoil induced by background events. We use this ratio also for discrimination, as it was mentioned. So I think it's a very powerful technique that we have shown to be quite powerful. That's one of the reasons we have seen this progress. But it's not just scalability that has driven the progress here in the field and understanding the material and make this detector work better and better. It has been also, of course, the holy grail of reducing simultaneously the background. And this is the impressive evolution of xenon TPC as WIMP detectors. We have heard about xenon 10, xenon 100. We have had the great looks, and then in between a Panda X, and now we are at xenon 1 ton. And you can see in pink here, there is the fiducial mass, more or less, as I mentioned, that these experiments have used as a target for WIMP search. And below you see the rate. So this xenon 10, which was so radioactive, very hot, because it came just from the shelves mostly in the lab, was not selected for being a low activity detector. It was a prototype. Thousand events per ton per kV per day. And we have gone from that level of background to, let's say, the lowest level that we have ever measured to date. In xenon 1 ton, as I'll show you, 0.2 events per ton per kV per day. So an impressive we wouldn't be here if we wouldn't have been able to reduce this background to this level, and that is, it's an effort that continues, of course, but that's where we are today. So what I will do, I say what is in operation, what is planned on next year or two, and then what's more in the future. On the genome front, we have still in operation this PandaX2 as CJPL, China Jinping Lab, this new laboratory which has come up a few years ago and which is expanding. I'll show you. This is a 580 kilogram detector. It's always been in between the xenon, the Lux, then there is the Panda. So we can talk about how these families are connected. We are connected. So there is still in operation, as far as I know, at the Jinping Lab 1. And we have Xeno 1 ton in operation at Gran Sasso with 2,000 kilogram in the active TPC of xenon. So first PandaX, we have seen these results already before. I think Jocelyn showed one of the spin-dependent result, spin-dependent Wnt proton cross-section from this PandaX2. So they clearly have most likely overestimated their background. There is clearly an under-fluctuation of a background, but this is the best results from PandaX combined run 9 and 10. And as far as I know, they might still have more data at the moment, but it's quite an impressive result with this intermediate scale before Xeno 1 ton and after Lux. What are they planning to do? That's maybe the important question, the interesting question. I have read, I've taken the slides mostly from people who recently talked at UCLA Dark Matter. So this is from John Lai directly. So I read that, of course, they will operate with up to 2018, at least it's written somewhere in a slide. So probably this experiment will stop to make room for the plan that they have in the Jinping Lab 2. You see the ambition there. I'm not the director of LNGS, but this is, you know, the Jinping 2 lab is 8 experimental hall. It's going to be, they want it to be as large, if not larger, than the Gran Sasso underground laboratory in terms of space. And if I didn't say, I forgot to say, this is a very deep lab. So this is the deepest place, underground laboratory, deeper than Snow Lab. So PandaX, what is called XT, the first step that I think they will go for is a photon target. This is not photon fiducial, photon total, as far as I know. So again, it's an intermediate step between 1 ton and then ton OLZ, just being in between. 2019, 2020, that's the time scale. And you can see on this plot, we've seen several of these plots. I mean, it's a bit fuzzy, but you can see, again, the thing in being in between LZ and ton and the current level. Xeno 1 ton is the current phase of the xenon program. We got them to the ton scale, as we proposed a long time ago, and with one detector, as I mentioned before, we got bold. So this is a TPC which has been in operation since October of 2016 with 3.2 ton of liquid xenon in a 1 meter drift detector aiming at this cross section. So 5 minutes is very short. I want to point out, somebody mentioned why the xenon 10 is still on some of these maps as the best results for. And I think I will only say, notice the drift length. We have gone from 15 centimeter deep detector to 1 meter drift. The field in xenon 10 was much higher. We had a much higher purity of the smaller amount of liquid, and that contributed to less of that dark ants that you mentioned. But so we challenged ourselves to put 1 meter drift detector. That was not trivial. This is the infrastructure of xenon 1 ton if you visit. LNGS is a beautiful place. We are in all B at LNGS. The experiment is well described in that paper. The TPC, of course, is in a water Cherenkov muon Vito, about 10 meter tall, 10 meter diameter tank filled with pure water and a bunch of photomultiplier. And we have all these infrastructures or systems which make this experiment work, from cryogenic to storage and distillation, purification and electronics, of course. The detector itself, I have a picture probably somewhere. The collaboration has grown. We're not so many, but we are at the level of 170 people today from around the world. And as you probably know, as I said at UCLA, I'm sorry, but it will come out in a, within this month, I wrote, it is true, within this month we will release the result. The paper is in internal review. We have accumulated, we have run this experiment for more than a year. That's been one of the milestones, as I mentioned before, we have gotten there. And we have about 1 ton here, because if we take, we have increased the fiducial mass to 1.3 ton compared to the first result. And so we have about a ton here of data, an amazing exposure, and with the lowest background, as I mentioned, that we have ever measured, you can see the level of background. This is event per kV per ton per day of Panda X also, and the Lux Xenon 100 and so on. And I forgot, where is the Dharma? Ah, Dharma has been squashed there, but you know, Dharma, the latest, it's up there, it's way up there. And so 0.2 event, that's quite an amazing background, and we have, yeah, we are dominated by radon. This background is not dominated by krypton anymore, by material radioactivity. Now we are fighting the radon background, which is everywhere. And we, as we build the next experiment, the next TPC, we're very much aware of what we have to do, and we have identified strategies to mitigate this radon level by a factor of 10. Another amazing result from Xenon 1 ton, which I couldn't believe myself, is that despite being a very big TPC, we have one of the best energy resolution that we have ever measured since I started my career with this noble liquid. So it's an amazing 1.6 or so percent sigma at 2.5 MeV. That gives you, you see the blinded region of the neutrino less double beta decay. It's one of the many things we want to do with the data from this experiment. And this is what we project, but I will let you wait a few more days or weeks or whatever it takes, but we will give you this result soon.
From, we hope you have a signal.
Of course, the signal, 3 sigma excess in full exposure is 50% chance if the cross sections were right there, but don't let me say more. We are working very hard about the next step, which is N-ton. So for us, N-ton is an upgrade of the detector using all the infrastructure that we have. We're going to make 4 times more fiducial mass detector with an 8-ton total, 5.9 ton in the target. And we want to reduce, as you can see, we want to go up in mass. We want to reduce the background by another factor of 10, where background here is radon mostly. Fast turnaround, because as I mentioned, we're going to reuse the infrastructure and most of the system that we already built. One of the addition, as you know, we are going to put a neutron beta, of course, as the sensitivity gets pushed up. We need to take care of this. And we're going to have a radon distillation for the removal of radon. And especially my group particularly is working on improving this purification process, which is one of the issues that we have. And we're going to try for the first time in liquid xenon, a liquid xenon purification. Just to mention for those of you xenon guys, I mean, we currently upgraded the purification system, the flow, and we go close to a millisecond lifetime finally, but we don't want to pain so much for an 8-ton detector. We're going to have a much faster flow equivalent to 5,000 liter per minute with the liquid purification. So that's what we're doing. Then we have LZ working very hard and very fast. It's nice to race, but LZ is going to be there, and you see the baby Lux and LZ. This is going to be 7 ton in the active detector with 5.6 ton in fiducial. So physics data taken by 2020, so we're very close in time scale. We're running together, parallel road, but I think it's fun to be at this stage still. This is going to be in SURF, as you know, in the same location where Lux has been removed, right? It's going to be, of course, in the same water shield, but they are going to have, of course, an active neutron veto in addition to a liquid xenon shield, a la Xenon 100. That's wonderful, and a lot of commonality, but of course, different approaches to all this challenge that we have to solve. 1 minute for the liquid argon guys. Sorry, Jocelyn. Well, I mean, okay, so, I mean, okay, for Laura too, you wait. Darwin is on the way, but that will be the next generation, or more in the future, beyond Zenon. I say Darwin, because Darwin is currently only a Le Cuisine observatory, the ultimate observatory, where we can do an amazing amount of physics. We have talked about it a little bit, but we are going to a scale of 40, 50 ton from where we are today. And it has been said how impressive. I pulled out this plot from Manfred, where you can see, let's say, at least one of the channels that we are going to see neutrinos. Real-time measurement of solar neutrino flux with precision, we start to be 1% statistical uncertainty for this for a long time data taking. So in operation, we heard from Jocelyn the great deep 3600, the dark side 50, the small 50 kilogram detector, two-phase TPC still in operation, and we heard about the great results that they released recently on the single, on the S2 only analysis. So this has been shown by Jocelyn. So we know that the decay time of the scintillation in liquid argon, which is a 120 nanometer, is a powerful discriminant for nuclear recoil from electronic recoil. We have seen this 4 days, 4.4 days of data have been analyzed and released by the Deep 3600 collaboration. This is the Taup result. So, and as far as I understand, there is about 2 years of data now in hand. More like one. So we're waiting for that 1 year of data to be released, the results. But this is the projection. That's where Deep is compared, let's say, to the others. This is Zeno-Wanton first result, and the projection of Deep 3600. But I think that's for more than 1 year of data. This projection is for longer time. But so Deep is there and is taking data. Dark side, I'm running out of time, but we've seen this plot already. It's an amazing result, and that's the reason why this S2 only was so good. I think it was really the cathode was made for dark side 50 with this ITO and so on, was really allowing very high sensitivity for single electron, and so great that they managed to do that. And then we have heard about this global argon dark matter collaboration. They all, this marriage there in that camp works very easily. I think we are more pig in the Zeno camp. But so there is this big family, but what we are going to see next, as you heard, is dark side 20K. We're really excited about this next phase. It's a huge step. You're going from a 50 kilogram, this is a two-phase TPC, it's not a deep. I have to be the usual practical person. We're going from a 50 kilogram detector to the 20,000 kilogram. Yes, 20K is 20,000. This is a big gap. It's going to be not with phototubes, it's going to be with 14 square meter. Jocelyn showed this 25 square centimeter tile. We have to tile 14 square meter of surface with silicon PM, but there's a lot of progress on that, a lot of support in Italy, in Canada, in the US also NSF is supporting. And so this is going to be, you can see all these lines. I mean, the time scale is very accelerated. That's 2021 at LNGS. This experiment will be placed in the whole sea of, is it C or A? In whole sea of LNGS. And of course, we have heard about 300 ton, but I see that is more in the future. So if Darwin is a Le Cuisine, an observatory on the liquid argon side, there's going to be at 300 ton, you can understand the scaling. We have to make it much larger with argon. But that's where we are with the argon effort. I think that Deep with dark side joint forces, stop talking, and they're planning on this dark side 20K. I don't have to read the summary, so if there are questions, I hope I made a brief overview of what's running and what will come. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, let's see, questions. Harry.
It was a very good talk, thank you. One comment, sort of almost for this conference, is that it may seem excessive to have three big liquid xenon detectors, but there's at least three things I can think of that after the initial search one could do, and Elena talked about one of them. One of our limitations on S2 only is the purity of the xenon, and you're doing better purification. And that's one of a set of things we know that could enable us to do better on S2 only. It's really hard, but you know, we're going to have these three detectors. One of them is going to figure out how to do better. That second thing is just the isotopic changing the isotope ratios. One of the experiments could do that. The third is, you know, one said it broadly, you could insert another experiment inside, and the simplest way to do that is to put helium in, or maybe methane, or some different nucleus that could its recoils could be detected. So I just want to endorse, it isn't just only what you've said, it's even more.
Yeah, no, I agree, but also even for just what I said, we're looking for something so rare, I think it will be nice to have the same technology looking in another location with different systematic, with different approaches to solutions. I mean, it's amazing at the end if we manage to get there by similar time. I wouldn't like to wait another 10 years to have another step. And I don't fully understand the step in between, but that's more political, that's
no,
more.
You're very young. You're in your
30s. No, we all, no. But
okay,
I think
so
it's
more
good.
Questions.
It's good to have two xenon detectors of similar scale and sensitivity, that's the bottom line.
Other questions? Okay, I don't see any, so let's thank Elena again. Thank you. So we will go now to another liquefied noble element, but a very light one. So Dan McKinsey will talk about light, dark matter, and light, nuclei, helium.